Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home renovation and repair. Zero in a bit on venting with our two guests today, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, regulars who come by pretty much every other month to talk with us about what's going on with your home. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Ken, good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
And John, nice to see you, too. Did you lose a little weight, or have you, or is it just the summer clothing?
No, my cardiologist right now is my friend, Larry.
He is looking handsome.
Yeah, he's looking a little thinner there.
Guys, I'm blushing. You can't see it on the radio, but I'm blushing.
Well, you guys were listening to that segment we just wrapped up with Mike Holmes. Is it important to have high-profile people like him to draw attention to issues like poorly done home inspections?
Well, I think it's an absolutely great idea because there's so many things that can go wrong in construction, and there's many, many people out there, especially now when there's economy is down, and a lot of people, everybody with a hammer can go out there and call themselves a contractor in one sense or another and make many, many mistakes. And the kind of mistakes we see a lot are flashing errors from people that don't know what they're doing. That's the first thing they do, and that could lead to real problems in people's houses. But I think it's great that you had him on the show. I thought he did a really good job, and I have to agree with him on many of the things he said, and including that it's very important to do things right the first time.
Yeah, his focus really seems to be on professionalism, quality, and then really understanding what code is and the problems, the terrible problems that we have with code. It's called minimum housing code for a reason, as Mike pointed out. In Wisconsin, if you follow code, you can build the worst house possible legally. And is that what people really want? Quality and professionalism, as I think Mike is correct, will really save you a lot of money on the long term.
You know, one of the areas that comes up, and we've had a lot of questions about over time, is relating to venting. And that's one of the reasons I want at least to get a couple of questions in about venting. And attic venting, why is it so important to have good attic venting? Mike.
We're both looking at each other saying,
Ken,
after
you
are, no, after you.
Mike's no longer on the phone, so we'll go to Ken instead.
Well, there's many reasons that it's important, and one of them is because quite often there's a buildup of moisture that can occur in the attic, and air that moves through from down low up through the ridge can move that air away, that moist air away. It also keeps the roof cooler, which for most roofs is a very good thing to keep the roof from overheating and shortening its life. We can go on and on.
Yeah, yeah, Larry, one reason I suggested we discuss venting a little bit is a problem Ken and I are seeing frequently is people put a new roof on their house built in the 50s or the 70s or the 80s, and the roofer says, you know, you don't have enough high venting. So they add a whole bunch of high venting.
Yeah.
They forgot about the low venting. So suddenly we have an attic that is trying to evacuate air. Air wants to leave it due to buoyancy because that attic is getting hot. Well, where is that air going to come from if we don't have soffit venting?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's going to suck it right out of the house. So we're really finding a problem. And here again, code is an issue. You're supposed to have a permit to do a roof. You're supposed to have a permit for venting. And the code says that you have to have as much low venting as high venting. We are seeing house after house after house that has 90% of the venting high and 10% of it low, creating a lack of airflow, moisture in the attic, tremendous temperatures in the attic, and early failure of shingles. So, and, you know, here we're getting back to Mike again with professionalism, quality, and thinking the job through and understanding what we're doing. So when you hire a roofer and he says you need more venting, he's right. But ask him, high and low. Take a look at the Wisconsin code where it very clearly tells you how venting is to be put in. Or take a look at a website like coreavent.com that explains venting. And we'll even give you a nice worksheet on how to figure out what venting is correct for your house.
That's a really good point. Another thing that people do is they mix their vents and they'll have a they'll have a roof, and the roofer will say, well, let's just put in a ridge vent, even though you've got these pot vents here. And by mixing ventilation systems, you can create more problems, the same kind of problems John was saying. So even if you have a nice balance, when you start throwing things off balance by adding styles of venting, you could create problems. So knowledge base is what it's all about.
Janet in Black River Falls has a question for you guys. Let's go to her. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We're interested in a home, and I'm not sure this will qualify under ventilation. We're interested in a home that had a mild crack in the basement, the foundation. It was built in 12,005. It was repaired, but the repair was only a little over $300. We saw that. And we're concerned because the basement is, it's a finished basement, and how do we know behind the drywall in the finished basement that there isn't water in there? There isn't dampness in there.
Well,
Ken, go ahead.
That's a good question, Janet. And first of all, in 2005, we have building codes in place that are require sub pumps and require exterior vapor barrier on the foundation. So did you get any moisture in the basement when it was cracked, or was this cracked before you, or cracked repaired before you bought the place?
Well, we haven't bought it yet. We're just
we're
interested, but we're a little concerned about this. They had in the area what they called a 100-year flood. And so we assume, because I know in that area there were a lot of, right afterwards, the streets were just full of this wet carpeting, some of the furniture and everything. But I just don't know, know. They had moisture. They definitely had moisture in the basement.
Have you had, have you put an offer in? Have you talked to an inspector yet?
We put in an offer, and there is going to be an inspection.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to John, and he's going to tell you some very specific things about how to manage your inspection.
Okay.
Well, and we're going to talk about the limitations on inspectors in Wisconsin also, because Wisconsin inspectors are not allowed to drill holes in walls and disassemble things. Unless, of course, you got permission from the homeowner first.
Okay.
An inspector can look at what is observable. And obviously, this crack in the backside of that drywall is not observable. So you may have to have your real estate broker or your real estate attorney speak to the people and say, Wisconsin law doesn't allow the inspector to look, but we want to have a contractor come in, or we want you to give the inspector permission to remove a small section of drywall, which can be easily patched, to take a look at what's going on back there.
Okay, because that's what we're concerned about. That's a good idea. I didn't know that was possible.
Oh, it's always possible, and most homeowners are willing to have you take a look at something. If you know, if it's something that can be fixed very easily, you know, it might cost an extra couple of $100s, but certainly that is a cheap investment for peace of mind.
Okay.
The other thing to remember is these 100-year floods now happen about every 5 years.
That's
so
what I noticed.
That is a consideration.
Yes. And how about a camera with an infrared? That was mentioned somewhere along the line. Does that do a thorough job?
That is inadequate in a basement at this point. You can see some differential cooling due to evaporation of moisture, but let's say that thing leaked during the 100-year flood and now is totally dry.
Yes.
So the camera is going to show that wall being a uniform color.
Uh-huh.
But then you get another heavy rain and it'll leak again.
Yep. Okay. This has been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Janet. Elsa in McFarland, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there, gentlemen. Thank you so much for the show. It's so helpful to learn all this information. My question is in regards to internal venting in my bathroom. I have a bathroom vent. It's a very small master bathroom stand-up shower. And the vent passes the hold-up toilet paper test. When I test it, it pulls the paper toilet paper up. But I've noticed black. It looks like mildew growing on the ceiling and walls around my shower stall. So I'm just wondering, should I upgrade the vent, or you know, what suggestions you might have for fixing this problem?
Well, possibly you might need to upgrade your vent. I was just working on a project for Jim Packard, who used to produce the show. And we went up into his attic to replace the venting on his bathroom vent, and we found that they had a perfectly good vent, but it went to nowhere. So what happened was the air was pulling a little bit, and it was basically pushing through the insulation in the attic a little bit, and just enough to hold a piece of toilet paper. That's that, by the way, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, you take a piece of fresh toilet paper and you turn your vent on and you hold it up to the vent, and it should hold it in place. And that's just a you know, sort of a simple test to see if it's pulling. It doesn't really tell you how much it's pulling. It's very important to size the vent for the room too. What do they say about 2 square feet or 2 cubic feet per foot of square footage of a house? Is that how does that work, John? There's a formula for it. I think it's like 2 cubic feet of air per minute for every square foot of room.
I generally actually look at the bathroom. Yeah. A bathroom with a whirlpool or a bathroom where you shower a lot is very different than a bathroom with just a bathtub. But our fallback is really about 150 cubic foot per minute, and we use mostly remote fans so that they're not so loud, and you can turn them on. The toilet paper test is maybe, what, 60 CFM?
Yeah.
And usually with those fans, if you read what Brohn or the other companies will say, they'll say put a timer in because you want to run them for another 15 minutes after you turn off the shower. And most people don't do that.
I usually run it after I notice the black growing. I'll run it for a good half hour, 45 minutes after my shower. And I live by myself, so it's only one person showering in the shower. So it just seems like the fan should be pulling much more, and I shouldn't have this.
It's a good possibility. Another thing you could consider is getting a switch that's a humidistat, so it will kick on when you get a certain level of humidity, and it'll keep running until that humidity drops below. Some fans now, I know Panasonic makes a couple of models that are as quiet as can possibly be, and also have humidistatic controls. How do you say the word now? Humidistatic controls, I think, as well as night lights and all kinds of little features, motion sensors and so forth. So you might want to consider that too.
But first, perhaps check up in the attic to see whether or not I'm venting to nowhere or it's actually truly venting outside.
That's a real good start.
Yeah, that's correct, Elsa. The other thing, if you've got your head up in the attic, is see what the insulation is around that bathroom. Because in the winter, if your insulation is very limited, then that ceiling is going to get quite cold, and you're going to get more condensation because of the cold surface temperature.
Oh, that's
got
a good
it.
Point.
Got it. Wonderful. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your assistance. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in as well with your questions and comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Stay with us. News coming up, and then we'll have more from Ken Adams and John Freiberger here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just wanted to mention that tomorrow at 11, I'll be broadcasting from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope if you're in the area, I hope you'll stop in. We'll be at the Sustainable Living Center, and I'll be talking with Marguerite Ramlow. And it's going to be a lot of fun, and if you're interested in herbs in particular, we're going to be talking about growing and harvesting herbs with her. I hope you'll stop by. You can sit in and watch, and we'll have a little talk on the air and off the air as well. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, I've got my two buddies, Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Ken of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg, who come by every so often to talk with us about home inspection and home repair. Zeroed in a bit on venting today, but taking other questions as well. And I hope you'll join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly welcome questions there. John in Minocqua has a question for you guys. So let's go to John. Hi, John.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a home that is about 10 years old. It has vinyl siding. We've observed that in one area it is fading. The contractor is no longer in business and has moved out of the area. I talked to one contractor, and he's trying to determine who the manufacturer is. But right now, it's questionable as to whether we'll be able to get anything back on having it replaced. Question I have is, can we paint vinyl siding?
Well, what do you think, John?
Well, you can, John, but it'll all fall off. If you'll notice where the siding pieces meet each other, you notice that they don't have butt joints. Instead, they have an overlap.
Right.
If you come out on a hot day, one piece has slid over the top of another, and you come out on a cold day, and there's less interface showing there.
Okay.
Vinyl siding moves a lot. So we've got some really great acrylic latex paints now that are really pretty stretchy. But I think with the amount vinyl siding moves, we're not going to get a paint that is going to last very long, especially up in Minocqua, because think how cold you are in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then think how hot that south wall gets in the middle of the summer. You might have a 150-degree temperature change, and I'll bet those pieces of vinyl change by 2 inches.
Nope.
So trying to get paint to stick to that is very difficult. You might have some luck if you pop off some vinyl to see if there's impressions on the backside to note who the manufacturer was. Maybe it was a faulty product and there has been some sort of class action settlement, but I think you're probably right. You probably have no recourse. Maybe consider taking all that vinyl off and replacing it with something that will last a great deal longer, like a cementous siding. That'll also give you an opportunity to check the wind and water barrier in back of the house. And one thing you should do, we mentioned problems with code. Mike was mentioning it earlier, and we've mentioned it since. Peek in back of that vinyl siding and see if you've got a complete wind and water barrier. If you have foam, that is a water barrier if it is carefully taped with the correct tape. If you have oriented strand board directly behind that siding, that is going to turn into mold and mush eventually. So in that case, you would certainly want to get a different siding on. So take a systemic approach. Take a look at what you really have there. Talk to a good, competent siding contractor and see if you have to replace the siding, you can make your house less leaky, more watertight, and longer lived while you're doing the work.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chuck in Viroqua. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, yeah, I've got a couple of venting questions. The first one, I'm working in an attic, and I'm putting insulation in the slanted roof, and so I've got the putting the baffles in for the venting, and I'm just curious, the baffles cover part of each space, but they don't, at the area right next to the stud, the insulation still goes right up against the roof, and I'm wondering why that is, and if that's adequate. If that venting is adequate, if it doesn't cover the whole roof area, it just covers part of it.
It sounds like you're saying that down at the base of the roof, where the roof sits on top of the wall, there's no space. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's plenty of a soffit venting that goes all the way across there, and there's space in there. What I'm saying is that those baffles that you put in up against the roof, and then you put the insulation underneath those.
Yes.
Those baffles, on the end, they don't cover the whole. They're not. They don't go right up against the roof rafters.
Oh, the rafters. So you basically you probably have rafters that are 2 feet on center, and the vents only cover 16 inches of that 2 feet. Is that right?
Or I think that's correct. It may be more than 16, but the baffles are designed so that, they taper up before they get to the rafter. And so that you have a section there where the insulation goes right up against the roof.
Yeah, a lot of insulators did that. They do make it's called just basically a baffle vent, or there's a couple other names for them, but they do make them. They're 22 and a half inches wide, and they fit right in between the rafters that are 2 feet on center, which sounds like what you have. And They should be fairly easy to tear out and put another one in.
Okay.
Put a couple of staples in to hold it in place. That would be the best bet. You think of any other way around that, Johnny?
No, I think you're correct, yeah. Ken. There's a lot of good venting material out there, and I think you and I both use Coravent, the Coravent company, and I believe Coravent is one of those that offers a full width baffle. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned them several times, Larry. It's cor-a-vent.com, mm-hmm. and this is the one that has the worksheets and the cross-sectional drawings and all kinds of and good materials you can order for old houses where you don't want to necessarily see the soffit venting. Ken has installed a lot of these for his mm-hmm. clients over the years, and I've done a lot of design work using their materials.
Okay. Can I ask a second question?
Sure.
I've got a steel pole shed, and I want to insulate the walls, and I'm wondering, can I put the insulation right up against the steel, or do I need to leave some space in there, some sort of venting on the walls, or is that, how would I go about thinking about insulating a steel wall for a pole building?
Chuck, typically the insulation is put right against the steel. That okay. may not be the best as far as summer temperatures, but that is the industry standard at this point. Usually it's a vinyl-covered batting that is installed. It often is installed actually between the wood columns, wood or steel columns, and the siding as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling in. Judith, in her usual a very efficient way, has already posted Coravent up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you want to take a look at our Facebook page, just click on that and you'll go right to Coravent. Bonnie in Neillsville, hello.
Hi. I have a question. I've got some drips in my geothermal radiant heating system.
Okay.
They're fairly slow drips, but, you know, you can feel the glycol in there. And there's no shutoff valves on any of the fittings. My company, the electric company, handles it, and they have suggested putting something, I'm not exactly sure what it is, into the system that will supposedly plug these leaks.
Well, I'm not entirely sure what's leaking. That's the problem. If it's leaking at a fitting.
It's a couple of fittings. It's the metal. Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's the metal part before it goes up into the tubes.
Okay.
And the inside of the house. It's not the outside. It's not the ground.
Have you had your installer take a look at it? Because they are usually very, very good about monitoring these systems.
That's who has done it, and they say they can put something into the system that will plug these leaks up.
Okay.
And actually, somebody else in town has geothermal, and he has had it done in his, and he claims it's working, but it's only been like a month ago.
Okay. So they're talking about an additive to put into the system that will actually help plug up the leaks.
Yes, I believe that's what it does, but my concern is, wouldn't it plug the whole system up?
Well, most likely no, but it could restrict flow in some tight elbows, especially when you make transitions between the plastic tubing and the metal tubing. So, you could call. Here's probably the best thing to do. Call the manufacturer. It should be easy to find out who the manufacturer of the system is. Their technical rep should be able to give you some guidance on whether or not this product that they're talking about will actually do the job, or is just a stopgap. You don't want to stick a piece of bubble gum on it, is what we're trying to avoid here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a good chance that it does work, or it's possible that they may have to shut the system down and tighten up the connections.
Well, evidently, the other option is to drain the whole system because there's no shutoff valves anyplace.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'd have to drain the whole system, fix the leaks, and then refill it again.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And how old is the system?
It was put in 1999.
Okay, well, these systems usually last a long, long time, so I'd start with the manufacturer, and if you could find out from the installer what the name of the product is that he was going to install, and see what the manufacturer says about that.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Gene in Oshkosh. Hi, thank you for calling.
Larry, gentlemen, you do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Got a question. We built a house about 40 years ago, had a poured concrete basement walls. There is one leak. I had, from my paint history there, I had obviously tried to fix it maybe 20 years ago, and it's back. When we water on the outside on that wall, I'll get three, four cups of water. My question is, how should I proceed? Is it something that the homeowner can do? Do I need to get a professional in there? How deep do they enlarge that leak wherever it is?
Where's it coming in?
It's coming in. There's a basement window, and it seems pretty close to the north corner of that window.
So okay, so it's not just seeping in from down below. It's coming
No, it's coming. It's coming through the wall at some elevation.
Well, generally, if we take there's two types of water leaks. One is hydrostatic head pressure, which means the soil is saturated and it's coming up from below. Those are really hard to deal with. Mm-hmm. Sounds like what you have is you've got fairly permeable soil. You're wetting the flower bed and it's running in high on the wall. In that case, what I would do is I'd try the homeowner fix first, which is dig down about 3 feet, put some peel and stick membrane over the crack, put the dirt back in the hole and see if it ever leaks again. If it does ever leak again, then you're going to need to call the professional and they're going to have to either do an epoxy injection, which is going to cost you around $1,000, or they would dig down on the outside and put a membrane on that section of the wall, which would cost, guess what, about $1,000. So maybe start with the $20 fix yourself. And see if that works, because this sounds like this is simply a little bit of excess upper soil moisture coming in, and it might actually be an easy fix.
How much do you have to clean the outside concrete wall to use that peel and strip or whatever it's called? In other words, you've got to fix it from the outside rather than the inside.
Yeah, you could... wash it down with a little scrub brush and some soap and water, use a wire brush on it. If there's any loose debris, you want to get it off. Typically, the place that you buy your membrane will have a little bit of an instruction, and that it's a common sense thing. You're absolutely right. Think about putting contact paper on your cabinet shelf, and you want to clean off any wax on there, but, you know.
Now, would you come over and hold my wife's hand and subdue the result of me digging out all those flowers?
Absolutely. is she a good cook?
She's a good cook.
All right.
Yeah, our regularly hourly rates do pertain.
Well, you know, this is a great job for like a grandson or even an adult son. You know, gives them an excuse to come over and, you know. Yeah. Just a thought.
There you go. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling, Gene. Appreciate it. All right. Sean in northern Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I am considering putting new siding on our house, and I really don't like vinyl siding, and I don't like anything that bubbles or, you know, gets wavy or fades. I want something really durable. That's going to last forever. And I really like seamless steel siding, but the cost is really high, and I wanted to know what your opinion was about the difference between, you know, steel siding versus, like, a quality vinyl siding.
Well, there's other options as well besides vinyl and steel.
Okay.
I'll just throw that out to begin with, and John, go ahead.
Yeah, there certainly are. Ken and I often suggest the Cementa sidings, and you can take a look at the CertainTeed company and look at weatherboards, or you can go to the James Hardy Company and look at all the things that they offer. And they offer cementous siding of different sizes, different types, panelized, lap siding, different grades. There's really a lot of things out there. Stainless steel siding is wonderful as long as you hire an architect and you're willing to spend the same amount of money that you'd be willing to spend on a commercial storefront.
Well, but there's also the seamless painted steel gutters that they manufacture and roll out.
But this isn't just gutters.
I'm sorry, siding.
The problem with all of this steel siding is unless it's put on very nicely, you can get the oil canning. Mm-hmm. And that is, I have a feeling, Ken, that if we looked at the cost, you know better than I, because you bid it all the time, that we're going to find the cementous siding and the steel siding to be about the same. And wouldn't you go with the cementous siding for long term?
Well, if you're asking me, yes, I like the cement board sidings quite a bit. They come with, if you pick a factory paint color, they'll 20-year warranty the paint. If you want to change the color of the house, you can change the color of the house. You can't do that with vinyl. Steel sidings you can paint, but they're a little trickier.
I love that cement siding. We have it on our home on the lake, and wonderful.
Is that the same type of siding that they used to put on the homes that were built back in the 70s?
No. This, if you go to Hardy's website, and look at their cement board. James, it's called Hardy Board, I think.
Hardy board?
It's not because it's Hardy; it's because James Hardy was the inventor, I think.
Okay.
And it looks great. It holds up very well. It takes special tools to install, so not anybody can install it. But that's far better than any vinyl, and it's more environmentally friendly than vinyl. And polyvinyl chlorides are not very good for the environment.
Yeah, I'm not a big vinyl fan. So, cemented. What did you call that again? Cementities.
Well, just look for James Hardy Company.
James Hardy. Okay.
And the second to look at is CertainTeed, the people who make the shingles. They also make the siding.
Okay.
But the other thing I want you to do is not just look at, but I want you to download the installation instructions.
Goodness.
Okay.
Because 90% of the Hardy plank that I see put on houses is put on wrong.
Okay.
And again, we're sort of going back to Mike Holmes again here, is you want a professional. You want somebody who doesn't do it to the minimum standards. You want it done to the standards put out either by the CertainTeed Corporation or the James Hardy Company.
Okay, great. I appreciate your input.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Renee in Chippewa Falls, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a stucco twin home, and last year it was built in 98, and I believe the paint and the stucco was mixed together before it was applied. Last year we had it re-roofed, and the roofer got some black marks on the stucco and shingles slid off the roof. Mm-hmm. And so he sent somebody out here to clean those up. When that person left, it was like big grease spots all over the place.
Yeah.
And so I called the guy that was here, and he said, well, just clean out the little Dawn. So I did that three times, and not a dent in the stain or whatever it was. And I didn't know what the solution was, and so I was getting some painting estimates, and a painter called and said, well, what happened when he cleaned that up is he took it down to the original color in the stucco. There's dust and something over time. And so the whole thing needs to be pressure washed and repainted. And I'm just about at my wit's end, I'm telling you.
Well, I don't think you actually have stucco, Renee. I think what you have is exterior insulation finish system. And that is a thin acrylic. It's sort of a heavy paint, really. It's almost like a paint with a grit in it that's applied over a base coat that is applied over usually extruded polystyrene film. Now, you should be able to find out who the manufacturer was of the acrylic top coat. And you may be able to get that same top coat and be able to patch in areas if it hasn't faded. You know, if it's a light buff color or something, sometimes you can do that. Anybody who has exterior insulation finish system, if you do clean it, you need to clean it with Dawn dish soap. But that needs to be the first step, not the second step. It sounds like they used something abrasive to start with. So do a little bit of work. 1998 isn't that long ago. You know, it could be a Dryvit product. It could be the company from California whose name I can never remember. But go back and see if you can look at your documents, talk to the builder, see what the product was, and you may actually be able to get a touch-up kit for it without painting the whole thing.
Oh, that sounds like a good plan. Thank you very much for calling, Renee. Appreciate it. And, boy, guys, the time flew. Today, for sure. Well, thank you so much.
What an enthusiastic show!
Yeah, we had a great group of questions. Really appreciate it, and thank you guys so much. And you'll be back, I'm sure.
We'll be back. It was great for you to have Mike Holmes here as a warm up act for us. We usually don't get that kind of respect.
Oh, thanks, John. John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Our guests. They'll be back and we'll do this again. And just to mention again, tomorrow at 11, I will be broadcasting live from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. Marguerite Ramlow of Artha Sustainable Living Center will join me to talk about growing and harvesting herbs. And I hope if you're in the area, please come down and be part of the audience. We'd love to have you there. And thanks again for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.